evening.
Good evening.
You're the first to arrive.
Oh, good. That's good. I thought I was running late, Hanok.
Well, it's been an interesting, hectic day. So, Baruch Hashem, welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome. Hope today has been smoother than you thought.
I'm not quite following what you said. I thought it would be smoother than I thought.
Well, me, hopefully your day went well. Better than you anticipated.
Yes. Yeah. It was an interesting day, for sure.
Has joined.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I've got company. So, I sneaked in here. I may have to mute.
And I appreciate that, but you're the second, so we're going to get started.
Okay.
So we're studying the Zohar from the Sulam commentary on Parasha Vayera. We're in section 20. And we're going to be studying Pasuks 259 to begin with today, after L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud, Kudsha Brichu, Ishkinte, Bidhilu, Urchimu, Udhilu, Udhilu, Urchimu, Leakta, L'shem, Yudhe, Bovavhe, the Yichuda, Shalim, Bidhilu, Yisrael, Limun Torah Mitzvah, Vasok Torah Mitzvah.
Has joined.
Vayehino Amadunai Elohinu Aleinu Maasei Yadenu Karenei Aleinu Maasei Yadenu Karenei. Good afternoon, Malka. We're on Pasuk 259. Amar Rabbi Yitzhak Sodom Bedina Tegehinom Itan Dikti Hashem Chim tir al Sodom ve'al Amora Gafrit ve'esh me'at Hashem min ha'shamayim Damasitra demiyayo v'da Masitra de'esha Da wada hu dina tegehinom b'chayavin tegehinom b'train dinin ilein itanu. The translation. Rabbi Yitzhak responded that Sodom was sentenced by the judgment of Gehinom, as it is written. Then Hashem rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from Hashem out of heaven. One was punished with the aspect of water, the other with the aspect of fire, and both are the punishments of Gehinnom. The sinners in Gehinnom are punished with both of these aspects of judgment, because there is the Gehinnom of snow, which is water, and there is the Gehinnom of fire. My commentary. With Rabbi Ashlag's comments, the verse is clear as written. No, there are multiple hells, one of fire and one of water, perhaps one of air and one of earth. That is my question. Racha's commentary. Verse 259 is depicting the two levels experienced when in the spiritual dimension of Gehinnom. The cleansing, purging place for our soul with the elements of water and fire. The focus on the two water levels of the cleansing using fire is being described here. The first water experience is boiling. bubbling water to the state of burning, and the next level was water in a frozen state. Note the intermingling on water and fire's interaction on these two.
Randala.
Each process is described
has joined.
The destructive words used are adjectives. To grasp the real message on these words, one needs to know the correct meaning of the terms used. For instance, brimstone. This is an old Germanic term used to describe cooking when boiling water to a bubbling point, almost to burning. It was interesting how this word brimstone was connected to fire. It gives the added intensity when fire is an attached part on this experience, in this purging, spiritually. Then the next phase was describing Gehinnom of snow. The water turned to a frozen state. Questions. One, is the Gehinnom spiritual experience possible on our physicality living? If so, what are the emotions of our hearts that it may be referring to that creates a hellish experience for we as humans, with the soul interacting with ourselves and another? Two, in your opinion, is it better to confront our private Gehinnoms in our daily living or wait until the angel of death is assigned to bring us to the cleansing gate into Gehinnom? Three, in the Zohar and the Torah, Gehinnom is referred to as a learning experience, to not fear. Do you consider it a learning that either destroys or enhances or both? What are the possible gifts one can receive when this spiritual cleansing process is fulfilled? Questions, comments, thoughts?
Hello.
Yes, Brava.
I wanted to make one comment. I think it's interesting that living in our physicality, that we actually feel at times that we are already in Gehinnom or hell because of some of the challenges that we have, especially when we're learning how to control, manage, or as well as experience our intense emotions, especially when they're on the negative side, when it comes to frustration, anger, and then, of course, goes into a very deep, deep emotional pain. These are the three steps of anger to get to that emotional pain, and it takes a while for some. And then also on the part of the water that's frozen, I likened it to feelings of numbness. Many of us who've been in trauma, like for myself, have had trauma experiences when I was quite young. That trauma actually was a catalyst that made me shut down my emotions. And how often I would find myself that I could not feel what was going on, then it would just, and I realized that the brain is doing its job because we've learned through science, especially through brain research, that the brain does very well to close off an extremely difficult emotional time in your life that generated tremendous fear. And being that the body, the brain does not want you to find yourself reliving that experience, that's where the forgetting comes in, and then that's when the emotions are shutting down. So when we have been experiencing or have experienced trauma, that can resurface by triggers from our interactions with others down the road, you know, and especially if we were quite young when the trauma was experienced, and we're not able to relate to it because there's no memory, only because the mind has shut that remembering part off. So Anyway, and when I was looking at this passage, it reminded how there is an interactive and an integration going on through the experience that I believe solely that Hashem wanted us to understand, because it's only the first three levels of our soul, the Nefesh, the Ruach, and the Neshama, that we experience in this realm. And then if we strive for something on a much higher spiritual level, those three levels of our body that contains those three levels of our soul, we have got to do the processing work, and that's where the challenge comes in. And maybe many times the confusions as well as the illusion that we think is real, but it's not. So this verse was quite intense when you relate it to one's own personal experience of growth that Hashem set up personally for you, you know, on a personal basis for your own personal growth, soul-wise. Anyway, that's my thought.
Thank you. I'd like to comment on a couple of things that you both said and that was written by you. The brain that shuts off the memory, it doesn't really erase the memory. It just blocks it from rising to the level. It is a protection shield that allows your unconscious to process those emotions in a more structured manner. But eventually they will always come forth. Sometimes it will be in the same lifetime, and sometimes in a next lifetime. Because that unconscious level, since it's not really part of your memory, it can come with you into this world. And I was just talking to one of my students who's not on the class tonight, but who was expressing certain things about a grandchild that the experience on Rosh Hashanah, listening to the shofar, that the child was just ecstatic. This is the child that's less than 2 years old, was ecstatic with the sound of the shofar, not out of fear, but wanting to hear it more and longer and more. And it was just, and it was an unusual response, at least to this student. And she didn't understand what the context was. And I was explaining that children come into this life with unusual aspects. My own grandson came in that before he was 2 years old, he was running to get a kippah on his head. And because, you know, his last lifetime, he had been a rabbi. And that was part of his memory. But it's not a memory that's in from this physical life. It's a memory that is given to him as a hint when he starts to discover what was his last lifetime and what were the mistakes of that last lifetime. Those unusual events, situations, he gets described because he doesn't remember usually before the age of 18 months or 20 months. As those things are described to him as he's growing up, they become hints to him to follow, to find out what was the mistakes he made in his last lifetime. Your question number two is very important, and I'm going to reread it. In your opinion, is it better to confront our private Gehinnom in our daily living, or wait until the angel of death is assigned to bring us to the cleansing gates of Gehinnom? This world is worse than hell. That's essentially a statement an expression or my understanding of the readings of certain aspects of the Zohar. This world is worse than hell. And the question is, what does one mean when they make that statement? hell is, in our worldview, and especially the Western worldview, hell is the worst place. Nobody wants to go to hell. But in the Jewish worldview, hell, Gehinnom, is cleanser. Why is it worse to be in this world than in hell? Because this world is also cleansing. This world is making correction for the mistakes of your last lifetime. But in this world, we have no idea of the causes of the cleansing. Why? One, because most of us don't want to know. So we don't look to find out how to determine what is the cause of this pain that we feel. But those who are on a spiritual path and do start to question what's the cause of this pain, it's not an easy task to find that out. What is the cause? But in Gehinnom, the cleansing is, we think of it in this world as being worse, but in reality, if you know the cause, then the pain that you feel in Gehinnom is cleansing. You're clear it's cleansing. It's not an issue. You know it's for your better path. You know it's going to lead to being cleansed so you can go to the Garden of Eden, which is heaven, which is this serene place. So this is the understanding. Your question is it better to do it in this world or in Gehinnom? It's easier in Gehinnom because you know the cause. You're in touch with your unconscious levels. Whereas this world, it's the difficulty is in determining what is the cause. Even if you know intellectually that the pain is causing cleansing, it's not at the level of your emotion. It's not at your heart. And so you don't appreciate the reason behind it. You don't recognize that you were the cause. Intellectually, I can tell it to you and you can think it, but it's all intellectual. It doesn't integrate the emotions that you're feeling from the pain with the actual cleansing. And it therefore takes a longer process. And that's why Gehinnom is in existence. Someone goes into Gehinnom only for 12 months. No one exceeds 12 months. Now, is a month in Gehinnom the same as a month in this world? No. But ultimately, that concept of 12 months is very significant. Does anybody else have any comments?
I know, question about the 12 months. Is that really the process going through the astrological months? Because each month of the Hebrew calendar represents a specific cleansing that is noted for that month, such as maybe the cleansing of one's, one's heart or one's anger. Like for, I think it's in Capricorn. But that's the one that heals the anger.
Each month corrects a different emotion. And there's only six basic emotions, which are 12. The aspect of that is the six basic emotions, they each have two levels, so that's where the 12 comes from. But essentially, each month is what? And that's what the metaphor of the 12 months in Gehinnom represents. Because how much will it take for that soul to be cleansed? Mostly what it's being cleansed of is its connection to physicality. It's metaphorically, it's like the dust or the dirt that has been attached to the soul, but it doesn't wash off. It has to be scraped off, and that gives you a more real perception of what is the pain in Gehinnom, which is different than the pain in the physical world. The physical world pain is pain. The pain in Gehinnom is spiritual. It's literally a scab being torn off so that the soul can be totally pure.
I was wondering, Hanok, a lot of our experiences, I'm just guessing on this, I assume that many of us on an emotional level are experiencing the ruach part of our soul. This is something that we don't always understand, but isn't that where our emotions as well as our soul is connected, and our connection with Hashem as well as to the ruach level, the heart level?
First off, Racha, you haven't really studied the advanced reincarnation classes.
Right, so, right, I'm sure. That's right.
When you say ruach or nefesh or neshama, you're thinking in terms of a whole body.
Right.
There's three levels, but it's really the
right.
Three levels in each of the organs. In each of the 248 parts of the body, in each of the 365 sinews or channels connecting tissues. So it's much more complicated than the way you've described it.
Oh, all right.
Question. I heard, read that a day is like 1,000 years. So does that relate to the time in Gehinnom? Or what is that? Why is that said in the Torah, days like 1,000 years?
1,000 years like a day.
Well, it's part of a prophecy, and I don't remember which was the prophet. It comes from one of the verses in the Psalms or Proverbs. I believe it's Psalms. But essentially, the relationship of time in the physical world to the first level of spiritual world, which is Yetzirah, time runs at the rate of 1,000. Each day is 1,000 years here in the physical world. And since it gets a little complicated again, and I don't mean to make it complicated, but since there's 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of night on the physical world, we're only calculating or utilizing that concept of a day as 12 hours. And in each 12-hour period, both day and night, we have different astrological influences, but those astrological influences are just their messengers, their angels. They are taking the energies and bringing them in and affecting human beings by those influences. So your question is, where does it come from and how does it relate? It relates in the concept of 6,000 years brings you into Shabbat, into the seventh day. The first 1,000 years of creation was literally the life of Adam. He lived 930 years. He was supposed to live 1,000 years. That was the essence of if Adam had not sinned, he would have lived 1,000 years. And when he left, when he passed, the tikkun of the whole world would have been completed. The So the concept of the 7 days of a week relate to the 7,000-year period, which relates to the 7 years of the Shemitah period. And there are seven of those periods, which relates to the Yovel, the Jubilee. And all that, but that's essentially the idea that time in heaven is literally, I'm trying to remember if it's 41 and a half, rounded up is 42 hours in our, a day in our world is 42 hours in heaven. That, which is why Hashem created the world with a 42-letter name. So we get all of these connections of unifications that, you know, we truly don't understand.
Well, but, the 365 days of the calendar and Gregorian calendar, but the Jewish calendar doesn't have 365. Isn't it like, I think it's based on...
The Jewish calendar can have 355 days at the minimum, and it can have up to 384 days at the maximum.
Okay. So the day known based on the Jewish calendar as a year?
Yes.
Okay, it's not on the Gregorian, it's on the Jewish calendar. So it could be 355 to 384 days in Gehinnom.
Yes. But you have to keep in mind that a day in heaven and the gay in Gehinom, a day in Gehinom, it's not the 24-hour day of our world.
Right.
I mean, you're touching on the argument between the creationists and religion and science, because science says the universe is 13 and a half billion years old. Well, that 13 and a half billion years represents 2,000 years, which is the first 2,000 years. Just keep in mind that the flood took place in the year 1654, I believe, or 1656. And the Torah was given in 2448. So you kind of put these things in perspective. There's a book that you can buy through the Daily Zohar relationships. He has a relationship to the author of this book, and he explains the universal or the calendar. He explains the 1,000 years to each day of creation. And then there's a book called it's part of the Ethiopian Bible. It really makes me smile. Out of all the Christian Bibles, the Ethiopian Bible kept this book. It's called the Book of Jubilees. And it literally tells you, it describes what took place in the Jubilee, every 50 years, what took place in that period of time from Adam's birth until Moses and the giving of the Torah. But it's related to the Jubilee period. So there's a lot of different ways to understand this. But the important thing is to realize that from this verse is that, that's also a thing I wanted to mention, the brachas, from the person, what you said. It's what's important is to realize that you have fire and you have water. But in water, you have different levels of water. You have room temperature water, you have snow, and you have ice. And then you have vapor, water that's become vaporized.
Right.
So you have the four levels. But what are they taking? Water is chesed, but ice is judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we understand that? But we're out of time, but it's a quick, just brief discussion.
Different types of mercy,
different levels. Snow is soft judgment. You may have heard us talk about for Rosh Hashanah. The first day is harsh judgment. The second day is exactly the same item, the same issues, but it's soft judgment. Well, that's snow. Yet the highest form of a mikveh is rolling in the snow. I don't have time to go into what that actually is, but I highly recommend it. It's the most cleansing situation you will ever experience. It's like literally a mikveh. By rolling in the snow, you cleanse all of the sexual improprieties throughout the generation, throughout the lifetimes. But as I said, I do have to go. We're out of time.
All right. Thank you, Hanok.
Thank you all. Shalom.
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 Shalom.